with her words. If I could possibly persuade you to another hardcore left-wing dinner, tomorrow, at my place. Solange shook her head. No, one per weekend is plenty. And I'm sure Steph's friends are pussycats compared to whom you hang out with. None of my friends would be there. It would just be the two of us. Solange took a step back and examined Aurore's face. I see what you're trying to do. Whatever your spiel, it's not going to work on me. I may be straight, but I won't be one of your causes, she scoffed. You can put that idea out of your head right here and now. No need to go on the defensive. Besides, we would just talk about the possible interview. I've had an idea. I would like to discuss it with you, in private. Then why don't you come to my office first thing on Monday? I thought I was a persona non grata at the Élysée.
A hint of smile on Solange's face again. How about I call you tomorrow morning, let you know if I'm free tomorrow evening?
Sounds like a plan.
Aurore knew how to read signals. She couldn't be 100% certain, not with someone as complicated as Solange. But she would bet a lot on getting a phone call from Solange first thing tomorrow to set up their rendezvous. Steph. Solange had said her goodbyes. She had even pecked Steph on the cheek, just as she had done with the others, and Steph wondered what her next move should be. She had missed Dominique tonight. She glanced at her watch. It was past 10. Was she still working? When Steph contemplated going home, for a fraction of a second, the thought of her bed at the Élysée popped into her head. But she would be staying in Nadia and Juliette's guest room tonight.
Should I give the chief of staff the benefit of the doubt after tonight? She asked her friends.
I think she means well, Nadia said. But I can't see the two of you ever becoming friends. Not like you're friends with us. She's just too square for you.
What? I can't take her for a relaxed drink at Le Univers to chat about this and that, Steph joked.
I think she's someone who has worked hard in her life and therefore has a bit of a difficult time relaxing, Margot offered.
We've all worked hard, Juliette said.
But none of us in a cutthroat business like politics. It's so easy to criticize politicians and those who work for them, but someone has to do it, Margot said. Let's not forget this woman is directly responsible for Dominique's victory.
As much as you would like Bobby and Sia to take credit for that, and you definitely deserve some, you haven't fought in the trenches for the past 20 years preparing for this moment. I admire Solange. She must have made a lot of sacrifices.
She's a bit reserved, but I don't mind her at all. She showed a lot of goodwill.
That must count for something, Steph, Claire said.
It does. But, what about the woman who failed to show tonight?
She glanced at her friends.
I hereby lift the ban on the D-word.
I'm with Claire, Juliette said. Solange has shown that she's willing to do what it takes to bring you and Dominique back together. It's only a small first step. But that's how everything begins. The ball is definitely in your court now.
I was surprised she showed up, Steph said. When Dominique canceled, I took it as a given that Solange wouldn't show up. Props to her for going against my expectations. But the fact remains that Dominique didn't make it.
And it's always going to be that way as long as she's president, Camille said. The real question is whether you can live with that.
Or to rephrase it in more dramatic language, is my love for her strong enough to stand by her through thick and thin?
Only you can answer that question, Nadia said. No one else. I just never thought I'd be in this position. I never thought I would have to ask myself this question.
Isn't the very fact that I'm having to ask it proof that, perhaps, my love is not strong enough?
Of course not, Zoya said. Sometimes life is hard. Loving someone always includes making some sort of sacrifice. Weighing your options doesn't say anything about the depth of your love. It's just you being a thinking, responsible human being who is having very human emotions. Love is not the fairy tale that most media would have us believe, It's hard work sometimes. As long as you believe the hard work is worth it, that you know very clearly that you're fighting for something that will make you the best version of you, no matter the sacrifices, then it can and will prevail. Zoya turned to face Camille, then looked at Steph again. I was in a long-term relationship that didn't work out, even though I believed for a long time that Rebecca and I would grow old together. Because the reality is that sometimes it doesn't work out. But looking at you, a married and about to be married couple, gives me hope for my new relationship.
Aw, Steph said.
Trust me, Nadia said. Juliet and I are very happily married now, but there have been times when we almost didn't make it.
Same here, Claire said. We've all done things we're not proud of. We've all had to forgive. We've all had to compromise and fight for what we have. Sometimes it becomes very unclear whether you and the person you love are meant to be together. But time will always tell. She leaned into Margot. I wouldn't know what I would do without this one.
You would spend a fortune on our wedding and obsess over the table setting for an entire week straight,
Margot said matter-of-factly. This made everyone burst into a welcome bout of laughter. Which is why we aren't having a traditional dinner with everyone stiffly sat at tables for hours on end, Claire said, after the chuckles died down. We are going non-traditional.
Thank goodness for that, Steph said, because I'm not sure yet about my plus one.
You should come, Aurore, Margot said.
Steph witnessed the quick arching up of Claire's eyebrows.
Maybe their invitation policy wasn't that non-traditional.
It has been a thrill to meet you, Margot continued.
Some of our guests would be equally thrilled, she elbowed Claire in the biceps. Your brother is going to be over the moon. She turned to Aurore again. He's a big fan.
You would be very welcome. Camille and Zoya, you two, of course.
Claire had already regrouped. The nearer she got to the actual date of the wedding, Steph thought, the more go-with-the-flow she seemed to become. Perhaps she would even be able to enjoy the day.
I would love to come, Aurore said. When is it?
Then Steph's phone started ringing. She dug it out of her back pocket. The name on the screen said Dominique.
Stephanie?
Dominique's voice was high-pitched and breathy.
I'm on my way to the hospital. Lisa's been in an accident. She's in the ER.
What? Which hospital?
Steph pushed her chair back. I'm leaving now.
Nadia's, Dominique said. Saint-Vincent, will you come, please?
I'll be there, Steph repeated.
They hung up and, for a split second, Steph didn't know what to do first. She took a deep breath. She had to call a taxi.
What's going on?
Margot was already on her feet.
Lisa has been in an accident. She's been taken to Saint-Vincent. I need to get over there,
Steph said.
I'll drive you. I haven't been drinking,
Margot said.
I'll go with you, Nadia said, to make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible.
Steph had had too much to drink. She had trouble processing what was happening. Only one question kept flashing through her mind. Would Lisa be all right? Dominique hadn't given any details. Maybe she didn't have any. And now she was on her way to the hospital, where her child was going through God knows what on her own.
Come on,
Margot said.
Let's go.
Nadia put an arm around her shoulders and guided Steph to the door.
Just come with me, Steph. Whatever happened, Lisa's in good hands at Saint-Vincent. Let's find out what's going on.
Dominique paced the length of the private room she'd been given while Lisa was being examined in another part of the hospital with her father by her side. Philippe's partner Angélique sat on the bed. As a daughter of the president, Lisa should have been brought to the Val de Grâce automatically. But Lisa and Didier lived with their ex-husband. They lived most of their lives not being the children of the president, a fact that was both a source of relief and sadness for Dominique. They both stiffened at a knock on the door. It didn't open immediately, making Dominique suspect it wasn't a doctor waiting on the other side, unless said doctor was bringing them bad news he wasn't keen on delivering. Dominique pulled the door open. Stephanie stood in front of her, flanked by Nadia and Margot.
I'll go see what I can find out, Nadia said. I'll come back as soon as I know more.
Dominique reached for Steph's hand and pulled her close.
Come here.
They fell into a tight hug that Dominique never wanted to leave.
What happened? Steph asked.
She somehow got her hand caught in the handrail of an escalator. At the cinema. She got dragged along until someone pushed the emergency button. Right now they're assessing the extent of the damage. She could lose her hand. She's only 11 years old, and she could lose her hand.
Dominique had held back her tears in Angelique's company, but now that Steph was here, it seemed impossible.
Oh, shit, Steph said. Where's Didier?
Sleep over at a friend's, Angelique said. He doesn't know yet. We don't want to call him before we know more.
I'm so glad you're here,
Dominique said, and didn't let go of Steph's hand. She looked at Margot.
Why is it taking so long?
I know this is difficult, Madam President, Margot said.
Dominique sighed.
Please, just call me by my name. In here tonight, I'm not the president. I'm a mother who's sick with worry for her daughter.
Do you know if Dr. Lamy has been paged? She's the head of pediatric surgery, Margot asked.
I think I heard someone say her name earlier, Angelique said, but I can't be sure. We're being kept in the dark.
Just hang in there a little longer, Margot said. Her calm demeanor infuriated Dominique.
She didn't have children. Even if she didn't know Margot via Steph, it would be obvious by the way she stood there oozing serenity and not saying anything of the things Dominique so desperately wanted to hear.
Nadia will be back soon. She shuffled her weight around. In fact, I'll go find her.
After Margot left the room, Steph, who was still holding Dominique's hand, said in a soft voice,
She got her hand stuck underneath the handrail? How did that happen?
I don't know, Dominique snapped. I wasn't there. I'm never there.
I was there. Angelique had risen from the bed. It was an accident. She must have been fiddling with it. Something must have been wrong with the escalator, or her sleeve must have got caught. I didn't see, and neither did Philippe. It all went so fast.
I'm going to have an investigation launched into that cinema,
Dominique hissed.
I'll have them shut down if I must.
Hey.
Steph let go of her hand and stroked Dominique's back.
Can we talk somewhere in private?
I'll go into the hallway.
Angelique stood up. The tension in the room was probably starting to get to her. I'm not recognizable the way you are. Dominique waited until the door had shut behind her.
This is Philippe's fault. He should have watched her better. Why didn't he hold her hand on the escalator?
She's 11. She's not a toddler anymore.
Dominique sighed.
Anyway, if it's his fault, it's my fault as well. We both failed her.
It was an accident.
Steph stood in front of her and put her hands on Dominique's shoulders.
Let's wait until we know more before we start casting blame.
This is doing my head in.
Dominique stared into Steph's eyes. They looked a bit glazed over.
Thanks for coming. I know it's not a given, and
of course it's a given. I'm your partner. For lack of a better word, I'm Lisa's stepmother.
Dominique brought the back of her hand to Steph's cheek and stroked it.
God, I've missed you. Sorry I couldn't meet you tonight. I really wanted to.
I know. It's not important now, Steph said. I made Solange go.
This prompted a small smile to appear on Steph's lips.
I figured she wouldn't have come of her own volition.
I'm not sure, actually. She didn't need much persuading.
Something's going on with her, but I'm not sure what.
Dominique had missed being able to have a simple conversation with Steph.
With her gone from the Élysée, her life consisted solely of work.
There were no small moments of joy when she walked into the bedroom and found Steph naked under the covers. There were no random chats in the middle of the day when she checked in with her. Dominique might not have a lot of spare time to devote to her relationship, yet it was of massive importance in her life.
Hey.
Steph's hand slid down Dominique's arms.
Lisa's going to be all right. I know it. She's a tough kid.
She shouldn't have to go through this.
A tear welled in the corner of Dominique's eye.
You can't protect her forever, babe.
That's not how motherhood works.
Dominique pulled her lips into a grin. And you're the expert now?
No, but I learned from the best.
Dominique scoffed. I hope you don't mean me.
Steph grinned back. I meant my own mother.
Ah, yes. The formidable Isabelle Matisse.
Dominique stepped closer.
She did an okay job with you, I guess.
Their faces were so close together, but this was not the right time to kiss Steph for the first time in days.
I need you, she said, instead of kissing Steph. I need you more than I can say, Stephanie. My life is not right without you. It's gray and cloudy and gloomy.
The door swung open without a knock. Instinctively, they both took a step back. Oh, sorry, Nadia said. I have an update. The four of them sat next to Lisa's bed, Dominique and Steph on one side, Philippe and Angelique on the other. Instead of thinking how between the four of them they could have let this happen, Dominique tried to focus on the good news. Lisa's hands would not have to be amputated. She would grow up with two hands, one of which would need time to heal and some surgery in the future. But she would heal. She was young and strong and resilient the way children are. She needed to stay in the hospital for a few days so the doctors could monitor how badly her hand had been crushed. But after that, she was free to go home, to her father's house. Lisa had been distraught and in intense pain when she had been wheeled into her room, but she had soon been given heavy painkillers and a sedative. She looked so peaceful now as she lay there sleeping, as if nothing had happened. Her one hand was wrapped in a bandage, but apart from that, you couldn't tell that she'd gone through such an ordeal today.
Which movie did you see?
Dominique whispered. What? Philippe locked his gaze on her.
At the cinema. Which movie did you see with her?
Saint-Germain, Philippe said.
I've never heard of it. What is that, a cartoon?
It's a rom-com with Romain Gaspard, Angelique said.
She has a crush on him.
A crush?
Dominique struggled to keep her voice at whisper level.
She's growing up, Domi, Philippe said.
Dominique suppressed a sigh. This wasn't the time or place to start this kind of discussion, but she needed to find a way to be a bigger part of her children's lives. If her daughter had a crush on a movie star, she shouldn't have to hear it from her ex-husband's new partner. Lisa should have told her.
I'll stay here tonight, Dominique said. I want to be here when she wakes up.
Don't be silly, Dominique,
Philippe said, his voice stern.
I'll stay. You need your rest. We know she's going to be okay. You need to get back to the Élysée.
Philippe had spoken many hurtful words to her in the past, but these seemed to pain her so much more, because they questioned her devotion to her daughter.
Lisa comes first.
Dominique squeezed the words past the lump in the back of her throat.
There's no need for both of us to be here, Philippe said.
Angelique put a hand on his knee.
There is. She has two parents. I want her to see us both when she opens her eyes.
Dominique was not about to give in.
How do you feel about a cup of dreadful tea from one of those machines outside, Angelique?
Steph asked. Angelique took the hint and nodded. She and Steph walked out of the room.
What's going on with you and Steph anyway? They might be children, but they know much more than you want them to,
Philippe said.
I don't think that's any of your business.
Philippe didn't deserve this kind of snippiness from her. Dominique was well aware of that. But right then, she envied him his role as full-time parent. Dominique wanted more than a Wednesday afternoon and a sleepover every other weekend. She wanted more time for her children, and for all the people she loved.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
It's been difficult between Steph and me. They must have picked up on that. They're smart kids.
They miss you.
Philippe's voice went low.
I miss them.
Dominique swallowed another lump out of her throat.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
He looked at her with his kind eyes, the intense gaze that she had fallen for so many years ago. I've been considering not running for a second term.
What?
Philippe all but shot out of his chair. Dominique hadn't uttered these words to anyone. She'd barely admitted to herself that this thought existed somewhere within her, because it sounded like the utmost sacrilege to a political calling.
Lisa and Didier matter more to me than any political position. I miss too much. If I run for another term and would be fortunate enough to win, they'll be going to university by the time I leave office.
She shook her head.
I can't even fathom that.
I understand it's difficult and that you want to see them more. But you live and breathe politics, Domi. It's your life. And you're a damn good president.
Dominique ignored Philippe's compliment.
I've almost lost Steph over it as well. Is all of that really worth it?
Dominique wasn't entirely sure she had Steph back in her life yet, but the fact that she was here said a lot.
Then change things. Make more time for what matters. But don't give up on your dream.
Easier said than done.
She leaned back in her chair.
Maybe this dream we had as women all along, you know, that we can have it all, was nothing more than a dream after all. Maybe we can't have it all, being a mother of young children and president. I don't know.
I'd be more than happy for you to see the children more often, Philippe said, because it would make them happy.
He rose and sat down in a chair next to Dominique.
But who'd you be to them, to yourself, to Steph even, if you didn't run for president again? You know it has been your destiny, your life's work. I'm not saying it will be easy, but it doesn't have to be as hard as you're making it. If you want to see them more, then you will. You're the president, for heaven's sake. Make it happen. Set an example to all working mothers in the country. Show them how it's done.
Dominique managed a small smile.
If you put it like that.
How about they stay over on Wednesdays? They can have breakfast at the Élysée with all the pomp and circumstance. You can even take them to school on Thursday morning yourself sometimes. They would love that.
Dominique shook her head.
My security people would have a fit.
Then let them have a fit. And after they've recovered, they can figure it out. That's what they're there for.
I'll definitely think about it. Steph would love for Didier and Lisa to stay over as well, Dominique thought, if she were to move back home.
Don't think too hard. Just do it.
You and Angelique want a night off on Wednesdays? She joked.
Philippe grinned.
I just want what's best for everyone.
He kept his gaze glued to hers.
What are you going to do about Steph?
Get her back, of course, no matter what it takes.
Good.
Philippe squeezed her shoulder for a brief moment. Then they both turned towards the bed and watched Lisa.
I'm still staying the night, Dominique said.
I know,
Philippe said.
We'll both stay.
Camille. On Sunday morning, Camille woke up to the signs of a small hangover. The evening had ended in an abrupt panic. But Steph had texted that Lisa was going to be all right, after which she and Zoya had fallen into a deep, exhausted sleep. Camille turned on her side and looked at Zoya, who was still sleeping. All signs of a hangover seemed to recede as her eyes feasted on Zoya's pretty face. She wanted to let her sleep in as long as she liked, but the urge to touch her was almost unbearable. She dragged a fingertip over Zoya's collarbone, hoping Zoya would find true and complete happiness in Paris. The way Steph had rushed off last night to be with Dominique and her child had reminded Camille that she could never live in another country away from her children and her grandchild. She needed to be near them, see them, hug them on a regular basis. If Zoya's homesickness increased and became a real problem between them, Camille wouldn't be able to return the favor of moving to another continent for the sake of love. Her motherly heart was anchored in Paris.
If you're waking me up on a Sunday morning, Zoya said, her eyes still closed, you'd better make it worth my while.
I will, but we have all day,
so I think I'll drive you crazy for a little while first.
Camille leaned in and kissed Zoya on the lips. "And we have leftover curry," she said, after they broke from their kiss. "No need to go out at all today." Zoya arched up her eyebrows.
"You mean we don't have any family duties on this glorious Sunday? No child minding, no motherly advice to be dispensed.
Flo's in Brittany with Mathieu's family. That's the great thing when your children get married. They acquire in-laws and subsequent obligations." Camille snickered. The truth was that she hadn't seen her granddaughter in 4 full days, and she couldn't wait to hold her in her arms again.
"Well then, we shouldn't waste a minute of our free time."
Zoya ran a finger up Camille's belly.
"I think I need some ibuprofen first. My head hurts," Camille said. "How about I release some of the natural painkiller oxytocin? I know just the trick."
"Do you mean to say you're going to perform a medical procedure on me, Nurse Zoya?"
"Mmm."
The sound Zoya made came from deep in her throat.
"I have to do it naked, though. I seem to have lost my nurse's uniform somewhere." She grinned. "Luckily, this kind of procedure is more effective when performed naked."
"Lucky me, indeed." Camille smiled down at her. "For having a partner who can kill so many birds with one stone.
Speaking of, I still can't believe I somehow scored an interview with Claire and Juliet, just like that, as if it was nothing."
"That's because they see your greatness, darling. They want a piece of it. From my point of view, it's perfectly normal."
"Let's not go overboard."
Zoya narrowed her eyes. "Steph has really taken to you. You can't deny that.
I like her too. She pretends to be tough, but there's something very vulnerable about her. Last night when she got that call, she looked so lost."
"But she had friends to take care of her."
Zoya nodded. "What a great feeling that must be."
She drew her lips into a mischievous smirk.
"Now to start my procedure and to make you feel better."
"Please, I desperately need it," Camille crooned. Zoya grinned and leaned in to kiss her. Her tongue darted into Camille's mouth and stayed there for a deliciously long while. As their lips remained locked, Zoya started toppling Camille over and lay half on top of her. Camille dragged her fingertips through Zoya's thick mane of hair, the softness of it so silky and familiar. This woman had become so much to her, and she would do everything she could to make her want to stay. She guessed that in this moment, the best she could do was kiss her a little while longer, which wasn't a chore at all.
"Shh,"
Camille whispered when they broke from their kiss, and she looked Zoya straight in the eye.
"Moi aussi,"
Zoya said, and her adorable accent floored Camille once again. There wasn't one thing she could think of that she didn't like about Zoya. She had fitted into Camille's life so seamlessly, as if she was always meant to be there and a place for her had been saved all along. Zoya kissed Camille's neck, then skated her soft, moist lips down to Camille's breasts. She took a nipple into her mouth and gently clasped it between her teeth, then licked it again. Camille couldn't wait for that tongue to travel down further. But she needed a little more patience. They had all day. A luxuriously lazy Sunday, which was so much more pleasant to spend in the company of the woman she loved. And even though tomorrow was Monday, and would bring with it the challenges at work, Camille could easily block any thoughts of that from her mind. In that professional ordeal also, she had Zoya by her side, and Duflo had decided to mess with the wrong women if he believed its behavior would go unpunished. Zoya kissed a path upwards, and their lips found each other again, and this time Camille sank into the kiss even further, and drew Zoya as near to her as she could. She wrapped her up in her arms as though she never wanted to let her go again. Camille never thought she would marry again. Not after the disaster her first marriage had been. But this person, this woman she could easily imagine saying I do to, and honoring those vows until eternity. Zoya's lips made their way down again, stopping at her nipples, kissing the underside of her breasts, her tongue dipping into Camille's belly button. When she started kissing Camille's lower belly, the pulse that had been beating in her clit grew more insistent. Oh, Zoya's magical tongue there. Soon it would happen. And not for the first time, Camille wondered how, why, and when all her dreams had started to come true. Even dreams she didn't know she had. Like being with this exquisite woman and encountering a happiness so profound she'd never even believed it could exist. Yet here she lay, with the love of her life draped all over her, planting kiss after delicious kiss on her skin. So I shuffled around a bit until she kneeled between Camille's legs. Camille glanced at her from under her lashes. The simple sight of this, it made her clit stand a little taller, made her push her hips up simply because she couldn't control the urge. Zoya buried the flat of her hands underneath Camille's behind and then, ever so gently, planted a kiss on Camille's inner thigh. She hadn't been kidding then when she'd said she was going to take her time. Camille had time, but she wasn't sure her aching clit was aware of this knowledge. Zoya kept planting feather-like kisses on her inner thighs, but her fingertips dug deep into the soft flesh of Camille's bottom, indicating that her desire was rising as well. By the time Zoya finally brought her tongue into play, Camille was curling her own fingers into strands of Zoya's hair, not only to feel even more of a connection, but to make sure Zoya knew how much she was enjoying her attentions. Zoya dragged the tip of her tongue along Camille's pussy lips, as though she had all the time in the world, as though it didn't set off a round of fireworks in Camille's belly when she did. Between Zoya's torturous licks, Camille glanced down at her, at how their bodies were enmeshed and, if their skins weren't different colors, you wouldn't be able to see where one began and the other ended. At last, Zoya put her tongue to work. As opposed to all the teasing it had been doing until then, she applied firm licks to Camille's clit, licks that drove Camille crazy from the get-go. If Zoya kept up this intensity, Camille wouldn't last very long. Usually Camille enjoyed the addition of a finger to reach climax. But this morning, perhaps because her body was feeling differently because of the hangover, or because she felt so connected to Zoya, she could sense the tingle of orgasm starting somewhere at the base of her spine already. Zoya changed tack and swapped the insistent licks for light flicks, but the tingle kept spreading through Camille's body. Oh, Christ. What was Zoya doing to her again? This woman, this fantasy, this dream of a person who felt very real as her tongue kept stroking Camille, kept darting to and fro. The action was becoming more insistent again, and Camille was powerless against the might of Zoya's tongue, against its prowess and its knowledge of Camille's preferences. And before Zoya even had the chance to slide a finger inside of her, Camille came, limbs shaking, toes curling, her fingers holding on for dear life to Zoya's wavy hair. When she came to, she slid her hands to Zoya's cheeks and tilted her head upward. Camille shot her a smile. "Did more treatment work?" Zoya asked. Camille could only smile. Oro. After Solange had confirmed that she was free for dinner that night, Oro had kept the possibility that she would probably cancel the last minute in her head. But Solange hadn't called back, and Oro's bell chimed at 8 p.m. sharp. This was the second time Solange had come to her apartment, and as she buzzed the chief of staff in, she hoped tonight's visit would end better than the previous one. When she opened the front door, Solange presented her with the same kind of wine, Saint-Emilion, she had poured when Oro had ended up at Solange's. "How very thoughtful," Oro said, and, suppressing a wide smile, pressed a soft kiss to Solange's cheek. "Why not give a person what you know they'll enjoy?" Solange replied,
Why not indeed?
Aurore stretched out her arm and welcomed Solange into her home, which she had tidied up a little bit, but not too much. Because tidying up simply wasn't one of Aurore's favorite pastimes on a Sunday afternoon.
I'm so glad you could make it. How's Lisa? She asked.
She's going to be fine, but Dominique has been glued to her side at the hospital since last night. When she called me today, she actually said the words, "We don't spend enough time with our loved ones." So I took it as a sign to do something relaxing tonight. Solange smiled and sat in the chair she had sat in the other night.
I'll make sure to help you relax then, even though I believe we have some business to discuss. But that can wait until later.
Solange shook her head. No, let's get the business part out of the way first. Otherwise, how can we truly relax?
Can I pour you a glass of this delicious wine first?
Aurore was surprised at Solange's straightforwardness.
Please.
Solange treated her to a crooked grin. What was she up to? Had she acquired some new ammunition to spice up their negotiations? Or was she, perhaps, just pleased to be there? Either way, Aurore was pretty sure Solange wasn't going to like the plan Aurore had hatched. But the evening was young, and she had all night to convince Solange of the benefits of her plan. When they both sat and joined their wine glasses together in a toast, Aurore gazed into Solange's eyes and tried to divine what her scheme was, or if she even had one. But she was hard to read as usual. Have you made your decision? The president will have a meeting with the party about the bill the coming week, so I need an answer now so we can plan accordingly. Solange's tone was suddenly much more businesslike.
The decision will be yours to make, as I have a counteroffer.
Aurore shot Solange a wide grin.
Isn't politics fun?
No need to convince me. Solange quirked up her eyebrows. Let's hear it then.
How about I invite Anne Riviere along to my show as well? We can make it more of a debate, live, on air.
You've got to be kidding. Aurore shook her head slowly.
I'm not. I can't have Dominique on the show without giving Riviere the same platform. That's not what my show is about, nor could I live with that because I would be betraying my candidate. But I'm perfectly willing to give them both a fair shot.
It wouldn't be a fair shot for Dominique, because you and Riviere are in cahoots. 90% of your audience must be left-wing. The president would be fighting with her back against the wall.
You're seeing this all wrong, Solange. Why would it be a fight? They agree on the issue. This would be a chance for the president to publicly stand behind the bill without giving Riviere all the glory.
And why would Riviere agree to that?
Because she'll get what she wants. No opposition. They'll both look like politicians working together across party lines. It will send a positive message. And positive messages are so necessary these days. It will give them a chance to condemn the Tous Ensemble movement together, and they'll both get excellent PR.
And so will you. Solange seemed to have relaxed a bit.
It's a triple win. Nobody loses.
Have you okayed this with Riviere?
No, I wanted to ask you first.
I'm not sure the president will be up for this, but I will bring it to her first thing tomorrow.
Good.
That went down much smoother than Aurore had expected. Maybe even Solange Garceau got tired of fighting sometimes. Or maybe the president had given her such a heartfelt speech out of worry for her child that it had made even Solange willing to build bridges.
So, that's settled already, Aurore said. Does that mean the rest of our evening will be devoted to pleasure?
I guess that depends on what you're cooking, Solange said with a sly grin on her face. There really was something different about her. Her defenses were down.
Oh well, you'll have to wait and see. Unless you're starving, then I can feed you now.
I'm fine. The wine is excellent, as well as the company. Aurore had to keep from winking at Solange. She still had to tread carefully around her.
How about last night? She asked. Did you think the company was excellent then as well? Or a few too many openly gay women in one room for you?
Solange scoffed. I guess I deserved that. She fixed her gaze on Aurore. But, some of the things you said resonated with me.
Such as?
Aurore's ears perked up.
Solange drank as though she needed liquid courage to be able to continue. Let's just say that I think in many ways you're the opposite of me. At first, it made me balk a little, but now I find it quite interesting. You're an interesting person.
I'll take that as a compliment, although I don't immediately see what me being interesting has got to do with anything I said last night.
When you said that thing about the biggest inequality of all, which I don't necessarily agree with, by the way. I've been in politics too long to know there are much greater inequalities than a frivolous thing like sex.
You think sex is frivolous and trivial?
Aurore tilted her head. Solange was unable to hold her gaze. Well, not in general, but compared to other things, yes.
You don't think it's a problem? A really big problem that women have been told since time immemorial to just lie back and let the man do his thing. Because that's what men need, and it's the woman's duty to serve the man.
You're twisting my words again, using them against me. That's not what I meant at all. Has someone ever had the nerve to tell you that you can be a little heavy-handed when it comes to certain topics?
Of course. That's what I hear all the time, mostly from men. And from women to whom sex isn't all that important. But I can't help but be passionate about this because this is one of the things I've been campaigning against all my life. How can men and women ever truly be equal, despite all the quota for government jobs and the rise of the female CEO if said CEO is expected to lie back and take it when she goes home at night and risk the wrath of her husband if she doesn't much feel like it?
Solange narrowed her eyes. Does all of this come from personal experience? Did you have a negative experience with a man? Because I have. Yet I don't look at this in as extreme a way as you do.
This is not only a matter of my experience, though I am sorry to hear that things that should never have happened did happen to you.
With all due respect, I didn't come here for another discussion on women's rights. I feel that was extensively covered last night. That's not what I was trying to say. Can we take a deep breath and start again? Solange set the example by inhaling deeply. Aurore followed suit. Solange was like a red rag to a bull. Aurore spent too much of her time rallying against Puritans who wished the world could go back at least 50 years. A camp she had always assumed Solange to be in since she'd met her. But Aurore wasn't as narrow-minded as the people she raged against. And she could give someone the benefit of the doubt and truly listen to what they had to say. Maybe Solange was just a little nervous.
I'm sorry. I got on my high horse there for a minute. It has become a pretty comfortable spot for me. Perhaps too comfortable.
Aurore ostentatiously closed her eyes and took a deep breath in again and exhaled slowly.
What did you want to say?
She asked, her voice soft and welcoming. Solange drank again, then slung one leg over the other. She looked into her wine glass as she said, Do you remember when I was here before, and I basically sprinted out of the door when you even dared to mention the word sex?
As if it were yesterday.
There was a reason for that. Solange's voice trembled a little.
Does it have anything to do with the bad experiences you've had with men?
No. I mean, I don't know, maybe. But that's basically just intimidation and men who can't deal with women in power throwing their weight around a little. I may not like that aspect of politics, or of the world, but I'm used to it and I can deal with it. She glanced up for a split second, then looked down again. No. It's something much more intimate than that. Aurore nodded.
I see.
She believed she knew what Solange was talking about, but she didn't want to put any words into her mouth. It was important that Solange say it out loud. How else to ask for help? I'm one of those straight women who have barely had the pleasure of orgasm. Definitely not while engaging in intercourse with a man. Barely when I, touch myself. Which is not an activity I engage in frequently, either way, because it just seems so pointless.
Even though Aurore had expected something like this, she was still astounded that Solange had somehow found the courage to utter the words.
First of all, you should know you're not alone. In fact, you're in the majority.
Being in the majority doesn't always put you in the right camp. Aurore was glad Solange attempted a joke.
Ain't that the truth?
She sent Solange a warm smile. What she really wanted to do was sit on the armrest of her chair and drape an arm around her shoulders and tell her she had come to the right place. That she had chosen to talk to the right person. This was probably why Solange had, again, reacted so testily to Aurore's words last night. In hindsight, it had been written all over her face and demeanor.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions? Intimate questions?
Solange just nodded. Aurore took a moment to ponder the situation. What was Solange asking her, really?
Advice? Or for her to make a move? Or perhaps she was just wanting someone to listen to her, and who would actually hear what she had to say? You're not in a relationship at the moment, Aurore said. Has it been a long time since you were in one?
More than 2 years. It only lasted a few months. I think I'm not really relationship material. I work too much. I don't have time for all the drama that comes with it.
What sort of drama would that be?
Solange rolled her eyes.
The same thing every time. Guys whining that I'm not there for them, that I'm emotionally unavailable.
My last boyfriend even accused me of having a stone for a heart.
Has it occurred to you that maybe these were not the right men for you?
Sure, but the circles I travel in kind of always make me end up with the same sort of guy.
Do you want a relationship?
Solange scrunched her lips together. I don't know. I guess it would be nice to have someone be there, you know? To not always have to come home to an empty apartment, or wake up alone on Sundays. Maybe that's what I envy Dominique for the most. I saw how she changed. How being with Steph changed her for the better.
Do you think you envied her because she fell in love with a woman?
No, Solange was quick to say. The gender didn't matter. Just the fact that she was so obviously, so blatantly in love. And that she used it to her advantage in the campaign. I was always against that. But Dominique listened to Steph when it came to that, not to me.
And look where it got her.
Solange heaved a deep sigh. I also found it very difficult to understand how a woman who had been married to a man for so long suddenly fell so head over heels for a woman. And a woman like Steph. I vetted her. I had to. What I found out was not always, let's just say, Stephanie Matisse hasn't been a chaste choir girl all her life.
Nor have many women. Does that bother you?
It bothered me about her because so much in politics is about how things look, and I worried what her reputation would do to Dominique. Dominique deserved to win the election, and I didn't want it to become all about Stephanie.
In the end, not a lot of voters cared, or they cared, but for the right reasons.
Solange scoffed. I even found myself thinking, and
I've never told this to anyone.
She held Aurore's gaze for a split second.
Nothing you say here will ever leave this room. I promise.
I thought, if she's going to be with a woman, why can't it be with someone a bit more like her, you know? Not such a tomboy. Not someone who looks so obviously like a lesbian.
She held up her hands.
I know that's a silly thought. I regretted having it. I'm just trying to paint an honest picture.
I admire your honesty.
Aurore realized in that moment she wasn't only admiring Solange's guts and courage, but also how she sat there, so serenely, with one leg slung over the other, her tone so poised, despite what she was saying. Her eyes so blue, her limbs tight, but her voice relaxing more by the minute. This whole thing with Steph has gotten out of hand, which is why I wanted to be there yesterday. Trust me. Dominique is much more pleasant to work for when she wakes up with Steph next to her.
You had to get used to a change. Sometimes takes time.
But, well,
This isn't really about Steph, of course.
That skittering glance that landed on Aurore again, then flitted away.
Aurore kept quiet, hoping her silence would entice Solange to say what she really wanted to say.
I don't know why I find you so easy to talk to.
Solange pulled her lips into a pensive pout.
I can think of a reason or two, Aurore said.
Such as?
You've seen me in all my glory on the internet. I imagine that breaks down some barriers.
Solange's cheeks flushed a soft pink.
No, I didn't mean that. I really didn't. It's okay. I'm not offended by your knee-jerk reaction to it anymore. Clearly you're not so bothered by it anymore either, since it was your idea for the president to be a guest on my show. What I really wonder, however, is what your very first reaction to that video was.
What do you mean?
Solange's voice tightened. I think you know very well what I mean.
Did it arouse me?
Solange all but spat out the words.
She shook her head vigorously. Pornography doesn't arouse me.
That makes you very different from most of humankind.
Don't start pulling percentages and statistics out of your hat again, please.
I won't. If you start being honest with yourself.
Solange narrowed her eyes. Wait a minute. She squared her shoulders. You don't think I started this conversation because I want you to seduce me, do you? Because if that's the case, I must apologize for giving you the wrong impression. That's not what I'm after. At all.
If disgust could have a face,
it would be the very picture of Solange Garceau's face at that moment.
Now, Solange, that's not what I think at all.
Aurore leaned forward to bridge the increasing gap between them.
I think that you needed someone to talk to, and I was the obvious choice. That's all.
She tried to hold Solange's gaze.
I sincerely hope you're not going to pull your favorite stunt of running away when things get a bit confrontational again.
Solange's grip on the armrest of the chair loosened. I won't run away, she said. But I could do with a change of topic.
How about we have dinner?
Aurore rose and held out her hand to Solange. She looked at it in silence for a moment, then took it in hers.
Dominique.
After making sure that Lisa was fast asleep in her hospital bed and getting three doctors' assurances that she was in very good hands and would probably sleep soundly through the night, Dominique had let Steph convince her to go home for a shower and a good night's sleep. The ride to the Élysée had been silent, but in the back of the car, Dominique had reached for Steph's hand and held onto it for dear life. When they arrived in the living quarters, their home, Dominique sank into her favorite chair. I want to sleep for 3 days straight, she said, as she put her feet onto the ottoman. As if on cue, Pierrot appeared from under a chair and hopped onto Dominique's lap.
You should call Solange and tell her to reschedule whatever you've got going on tomorrow morning, at the very least.
Already done, Dominique said. Monday morning, the country will have an absent president. Do you think anyone will notice?
I will.
Steph sat opposite her. I'm so glad you're here. If Dominique had had any energy left in her body, she would have walked over to Steph and hugged her, or made some other kind of gesture to express her gratitude.
At least someone is happy I'm here, Steph smiled. My little feline friend doesn't seem bothered in the least.
Will you stay? I know we need to have a proper talk, but I can't have it now. I need to sleep first.
Steph nodded. I don't want you to be alone tonight.
Thank you. Dominique pulled her lips into the widest smile she could muster. You never told me how last night's dinner went. Did Solange behave?
Like a pious schoolgirl.
Is that good or bad? Steph chuckled.
Good, I think.
She locked her gaze on Dominique.
Good enough to make me believe she's truly willing to make amends. To give things a try.
She kept her gaze on Dominique.
Why are you looking at me like that?
How am I looking at you?
Steph performed a half smile, as if she was trying to suppress it but was leaning into it at the same time.
Dominique knew that smile well. She had missed it terribly.
You know.
Steph shook her head.
Tell me.
As if you're up to something. Her lips burst into a full-blown smile now.
I have a question, that's all.
Shoot.
I know you're exhausted, but would you mind terribly if I came over there and kissed you?
A slew of butterflies caught flight in Dominique's stomach. She just shook her head and held out her hand. The movement made Pierrot jump down, as if he could sense he should make room for Steph.
Slowly, Steph walked over, gazed into Dominique's eyes, and planted her knees on either side of Dominique's hips.
She cradled Dominique's cheeks in the palms of her hands and looked down at her.
I've missed you, Madam President, she said,
and leaned forward to plant her lips on Dominique's. As our mouths met, tears started streaming down Dominique's cheeks. This wasn't the sort of kiss that would lead to anything more. It wasn't a kiss of initiation,
only reconciliation.
Of Steph telling her that she wanted to move forward, past everything that held them apart. It wasn't a kiss that erased all the words that had been spoken, and all the issues that still lay between them.
But it was a gesture of goodwill and love.
Dominique grabbed the back of Steph's head and held her close. When they broke from the kiss, Steph wiped the tears from Dominique's cheek with her slender fingers.
I'm here, she said. I'm not going anywhere.
Let's talk tomorrow morning, Dominique said. If you're free.
Steph grinned and nodded.
How about I run you a bath?
How about you kiss me again?
Dominique countered.
Your choice, Steph said. Bath or kiss?
Can't I have my cake and eat it too?
Well, you are the president. She paused. Although that line is getting old and overused.
As Steph leaned in to kiss her again, Dominique thought of the words she had spoken to Philippe last night. Had she really said she was considering not running for a second term? Had she been out of her mind with worry about Lisa, or had she, in the face of loss, spoken the truth? Then she forgot all about any words she had ever spoken, because Steph's tongue darted between her lips again and met hers in a deliciously soft embrace. Steph. Steph woke up to Dominique next to her, smiling at her.
Finally, Dominique said. I've been awake for hours.
And you're still in bed?
Steph's eyes widened in surprise. I've already called the hospital. Lisa's doing well. She can go home today.
That's wonderful news.
She found Dominique's hand under the covers and squeezed it.
What else have you been up to?
Mainly watching you sleep.
You look so innocent when you sleep. It's uncanny. As opposed to looking guilty when I'm awake.
Steph smiled.
No, but you surely never look innocent when you're awake.
Dominique scooted a little closer. She hadn't wasted any of her awake time putting on clothes.
You look sexy and mischievous, and as if you're always up to something.
Dominique planted a quick kiss on Steph's nose. Steph had been so tired last night and, out of sheer habit, before getting into bed, she hadn't put on any pajamas. She just slipped between the sheets naked, the way she always did, and Dominique had followed suit. Within minutes, they'd fallen asleep in each other's arms. Now here they lay, naked and fully awake, and in Steph's case, fully aroused as well. Was this how they were meant to start that much-needed chat?
I love you, Dominique said. I sincerely hope you never doubted that.
Steph shook her head.
Never. I know I'm very lovable.
Pierrot stirred at the end of the bed. He didn't seem very impressed by Steph's return to the Élysée. He gave her a quick glance, then put his head on his paws again and went back to sleep.
I wanted to say a few things,
Dominique said.
Things that went through my head when I was sitting next to Lisa's bed.
Are you sure this is the right setting for one of your La Roche speeches?
Steph grinned.